I'm Taylor.
I'm Kat.
And welcome to this special episode of Square Mile of Murder.
If you've been with us for a while, you might remember that last summer we did an episode on Anna Sorokin, aka Anna Delvey, aka the fake German heiress. And unless you've been living under a rock hiding from popular culture for the last month, which is basically like my parents, you've probably heard about Inventing Anna, the Netflix Shondaland production based on Anna's exploits and exploitation of Manhattan's social elite.
Yeah, buddy. You know, we've been more than a little bit fascinated by the story of Anna Delvey / Sorokin since we first heard of her. And when we saw that Netflix...
That net was on fleek.
What the fuck is wrong with me?
I have been asking that question for many years.
Yeah, yeah. So haven't we all?
Yeah.
There we go. When we saw that Netflix had released an adaptation of Anna's story, obviously we were going to watch it, and we did. And now we're going to talk about it. All about it. Probably in more depth than you ever wanted or needed. But that's why we're here, isn't it? Honestly.
Yeah.
So if you haven't listened to our episode on Anna Delvey / Sorokin, it's episode 76. It's called The Fake Heiress. We released it in July of 2021, so last year. And if you haven't seen the Netflix show, I don't think we're going to have many major spoilers in this episode because, like, pretty much the information's out there.
Yeah, I don't think it strays too far.
No.
From, like, the known major points in Anna's story.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty... Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So, what did you, generally, overall, what did you think about it?
Well, I should preface this by saying I'm a big Shonda Rhimes fan. Like, I have watched Grey's Anatomy since the second season and have watched pretty much every other show that she's produced except for Bridgerton, which I haven't seen yet. But that's just because I'm lazy.
I mean, I couldn't get into Bridgerton, but I'm not a big fan of period stuff.
See, I am. Just so, like, I love the costumes.
I thought you'd be into that.
Yeah, it's just one of those that, like, I think I was watching something else at the time, and then I was like, oh, that cultural moment has come and gone, so I need to wait till season two comes around to catch it again, basically.
Yeah.
But I do love her shows and her sort of, like, staple of producers, writers, director, stable.
I was wondering, when you said staple, I thought, hang on.
Her stable of, you know, writers, directors, producers, and actors, like, like, she's her own studio system, basically.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen a lot of what she's done. Like, I love How to Get Away with Murder.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen bits of Scandal, but I've never sat and watched it, so
I love it's like Scandals. I love it. It's really bad, but I love it. Like, it's good, but it's bad, you know? It's one of those.
And obviously there's, like, the crossover between the two. There is a couple of episodes where Olivia Pope is in How to Get Away with Murder.
Forgot about that.
So, like I say, I can't get into Bridgerton, but that's just, I don't like period. I don't really tend to like period dramas, so it's just not my thing. But going back to her staple, her staple is badass female leads.
Yeah.
And in both the character of Anna Delvey, I say character because obviously it is a fictionalized version of her life, and Vivian Kent, who is the fictionalized version of Jessica Pressler, who wrote the original article on Anna Delvey, Sorokin, Jingleheimer Schmidt.
Honestly, though.
So in both of those characters on screen, you have this these two amazing, strong female characters, which I think is, like you said, it's just what we've come to expect from Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Generally, as a whole, I thought it was really good. It's really well made, which you would expect from like a huge budget from, you know, like Shondaland and Netflix together.
Yeah.
So
I love how they used New York.
Yeah.
It's just really well done, and like obviously lots of shows do shoot in New York City because there's a lot of tax incentives for them to do so.
Is this the same reason as like loads of shows set on like the Eastern Seaboard will shoot in Georgia, and loads set on the West Coast will shoot in either Seattle or in Vancouver.
Yeah, it's because local governments give you tax breaks.
I mean, it's the same reason loads of American productions come over here, because it's cheaper to fly your entire cast and crew over, shoot here, than it is to shoot in America.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I thought they did a really good job of like showing certain parts of New York that you don't see on TV, i.e. buses. Have you ever seen a character in a show in New York get a bus before? I don't think
No, they all only get the subway.
Exactly. Like, I know there's a reason because she was going to Rikers, but like, just that whole thing of like, oh, actually, we're going to tell you exactly how this works in the real, I don't know, that just really got me. I was like, oh my God, I love this so much.
I mean, obviously, you have a much different perspective to me because you lived in New York, whereas I've never been. But so I'm going to assume that we all know what Rikers Island is. Notorious jail.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be winding it down to shut down in the next few years.
Yeah.
Whether that happens or not is another thing. But I've always known it's a prison. It's on an island. It's in, is it the East River? Between Queens and the Bronx, I think, or like Upper Manhattan.
Yeah, it's definitely Upper Manhattan. Between Queens and the Bronx in the East River. Yep.
So I know like where it is geographically, but I had no idea, even when I've watched documentaries like Time and 13, which have been about like Kalief Browder, you know, inmates at Rikers, I've never really seen or understood the scale of the place.
Yeah.
Like, you have to get a bus to get around the prison. That's how big it is.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, my experience of visiting prisons has always been you go in, you put your stuff in a locker, you walk through the metal detectors, you go in, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like a whole, like city, self-contained thing, yeah, you know?
So yeah, I think they did a good job of showing what it looks like to visit somewhere like Rikers. And like you say, it shows New York really well.
Yeah,
like you've got all these iconic places like the Brooklyn Bridge, when they're like waiting for the announcement in court, you've got all the, like the skyline is shown so much. It's got all these iconic places that you associate with New York, but then it's also got, like you say, someone riding the bus. It's got these little underground restaurants that, you know, the lawyer goes to with his family.
Yeah.
At one point, and it's got, I just think it's great. Like you say, it's showing New York.
I think what's also really interesting about it is, like, they took an interesting approach with this by creating, like, a two-sided story with Vivian Kent, Jessica Pressler, and Anna Delvey Sorokin, because, like, it could have just been her story.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I was reading something, it was like, that's what it was going to be originally. But then when they started talking to Jessica Pressler, they were like, oh, wait a minute. there's like layers to this that's like even more interesting. Yeah. So I think what the show did a really good job of doing is showing like what life is like for like creative people in New York kind of thing, which like sounds like a very like gross, like hippy dippy thing to say, but like New York is so fucking hard to do as an underpaid journalist. As I never quite caught on to what her husband was supposed to be, but he's like an artist or a
sculptor
or something. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, like you see that, and somehow they scrape by and they're having a kid, and like, you know.
And not just that, there's like the character of Neff.
Yeah.
She's now based in LA and I believe working in the film industry. And Shonda Rhimes is like Shonda Rhimes had the real Nefertari Davis. She was like, yeah, you're going to come on set. You're not just going to be a producer. You're going to come on set and you're going to experience what it's like. And we're going to show you.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so cool. So there'll be a link in the show notes. So BuzzFeed, as you can imagine, have done a shit ton of articles about inventing Anna and all the characters and the real life people.
Yeah.
And there is one about, in one of them, there is a bit about Neff and how she's talked about how Shonda Rhimes basically was like, yeah, we want to get you in and get you to see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, oh, you want to make films? Cool. Come and learn.
Yeah. Which is awesome.
Whereas lots of people are told, are like, nah, just sell your image rights and get out.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, that's a good point that like, yeah, so here's this young woman who's like working the concierge desk at a hotel and doing that to make ends meet and pursuing, you know, passion projects on the side. Like, that's very New York.
Yeah, and I think that shows two different sides of like the whole like hustle culture. Because like on the one side, you've got Anna Delvey, who is like by any means possible exploiting whoever's, you know, beg, steal, borrow, scam, everything to get where she wants to be. And then you've got Neff on the other side, who's like working a normal job, saving up. And then I mean, we don't know for, like, the real story, but, like, in the show, there's a scene with her and a boyfriend where he's like, people are shooting films on their iPhones.
Yeah.
If you were going to do it, you'd go and do it now.
Yeah.
And eventually she does.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, yeah, they make good foils for one another because, like, they both, like, we see them, like, take advantage of the situations that they're presented with.
Yeah.
And one is very, like, fucked up.
Yeah.
And twisted. And one is like, oh, this is an opportunity for me. But in a very earnest way, you know?
And also, how many of us, if presented with the opportunity to go to dinner with, like, you know, who was at that dinner? Like, Martin Shkreli, all these, like, socialites. okay, you can have this, like, this night with all these rich people. It's not going to cost you a dime.
Yeah.
How many of us would turn around and say, nah?
Probably not, no. I think the show did a really good job overall. I think there were some, so, not going to lie, I don't remember our episode word for word. I remember it more than most, interestingly enough. And I remember, like, reading Jessica Pressler's article for New York Magazine, which I love that they named it Manhattan instead, but it's like the same font and everything.
Yeah.
So, but like, there were some parts of it that I couldn't remember if they were like real, like, or not.
I had a bit of that as well. Like, I went back and listened to our episode last week.
I did not do that. And I did not reread the article, so.
I did all this after I watched it because I was like, it's like, I don't remember this happening.
Yeah.
And the bit that threw me was Chase.
Yes.
The boyfriend.
Yeah.
Because we very much skimmed over him in our episode.
Okay.
He's mentioned a bit more in the, there's a BBC podcast series called Fake Heiress, which we used as part of our research. They go into a bit more detail and they name him, and I cannot remember his name. But then more recent articles that have come out since Inventing Anna's come out have said that nobody knows for sure who he is. I'm like, but the BBC found out quite easily.
Yeah.
And like I said, I can't remember his name, but he was working on an app called Shadow as opposed to Wake. And it was to do with, like, dream technology.
Which, like, I'm sorry, but the way they wrote that whole spiel, like, it was so perfectly written to embody just how fucking dumb this whole concept was. I was, like, dying. I love it. What do we think of Anna?
$1 million question. See, I think they showed her as like a really complex character as opposed to just this black and white scam artist, like, oh, she only did bad things. Whereas they showed her as like, oh, yeah, she did some bad things, but she had this big dream overall. And, like, she treated Neff well. She never scammed Neff. She never really scammed Casey Duke. I think it was just, like, the plane ticket back from Morocco. I think other than that, she didn't owe her any money. So I think they've, like, kind of softened, not so much softened her and her character, but almost, like, softened the blow.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I really struggled because, and I know that they did this on purpose, but like, we were watching it and I found myself getting really angry because I was feeling sympathy for this terrible person.
Yeah.
And that's a testament to the creative team and like how they built everything together, because when we were doing our episode, like, to a certain degree, I felt that way when reading Jessica Pressler's article, but like seeing it all come together in such a way, like, you get sucked in, you're like rooting for her, but then you realize what you're doing and you're like, fucking stop it.
Yeah, like, I have really, like, conflicting opinions of her in real life, because kind of, I'm like, what you did was awful. You destroyed, like, well, I say destroyed, like, I was going to say she destroyed Rachel's life, but obviously she's made money off it, so she's, and the Amex fees eventually were waived, so, you know, that was resolved in a way, but she still went through, like, months of, like, panic mm-hmm. and anxiety and everything about it. But at the same time, I'm like, those dudes on Wall Street, if you cannot do your due diligence
yeah.
before you hand over a $200,000 overdraft,
yeah,
you deserve it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like, I think we talked about this, correct me if I'm wrong, during our episode, but like, for the most part, there weren't a lot of like technical crimes. There was a lot of people not checking things that they should have been checking.
Yeah.
Like she did do some check kiting, which we see in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's basically like people just took her word for it.
Yeah. But and that is a big part of being able to con someone. Like yeah. people forget con stands for confidence.
Yeah. And like I mean, I don't know. It's so hard cuz such a fucking like gray area. Like
yeah.
I think the actress who played Anna, Julia Garner, she did a really good job.
Yeah.
I found her accent utterly infuriating throughout the entire series.
Yeah, that drove me insane.
But I think that was on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, when I've been scrolling through, like, social media, anytime I've seen an article about this show, I've, like, clicked on it to read because I'm just like, oh, I'm just obsessed, basically.
Yeah.
I have no life. And there's one article where she talks about working with a dialect coach, a voice coach and everything. And she's like, so she had to learn the Russian accent and then layer that with a German accent. But then she had to layer that with like German learned in Europe as opposed to, with English learned
in Europe
as opposed to it learned as a second language in America.
Uh-huh.
So that she would have like the right... like dialect and, you know, just different ways of pronouncing things between British English and American English.
Yeah.
And I'm reading about how Ovid did this and I'm like, well, then you have no excuse for how bad it was.
But I think that's the thing, like, I've never heard Anna Sorokin speak, like, the real Anna. And I don't know if...
I don't think I have, to be honest.
Evidence of that exists. I mean, I'm sure she has spoken at some point in her life, but...
Yeah, she's a bit... I mean, she's been interviewed a lot in the few weeks between her release and being taken into custody by ICE.
Yeah. But, like... So. I think that's kind of part of it. Like, it's supposed to be a baffling accent for a baffling person who, like, nobody could really pin down one way or the other. Should we talk about the Russia of it all, or Germany of it all?
Oh my god. I cringed all the way through the Germany episode.
I was not expecting it to go there. Like, literally, go to Germany. Yeah. Honestly, it was interesting because I kind of thought that the end of the, was it like the seventh episode, was the end of the series. And then I was like, oh, wait, there's like two more episodes.
Mm.
Which like then made sense because, you know, we still had to catch up to some like real time stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah. I think that was where they lost me a little bit, because it's like, oh, look at her tragic backstory. But even though it's not, but like, you know,
it felt very jarring.
Yeah, it's very different
to the rest
in tone.
So I know there was a lot of different backstories that Anna gave to people, like she was a German heiress, her family were Russian oligarchs mm-hmm. who'd had to leave Russia and settled in Germany, and the business was a front and this, that and the other. But it just felt very jarring. Like, it didn't fit with the rest of the show. And I suppose in a way that kind of makes sense because uh-huh. she comes from Eichweiler,
uh-huh.
which is this little small town in Germany. And it's worlds away from, you know, the bright lights of New York.
Yeah.
So I get it in that way, where how it's very jarring.
That was like the point where, yeah, I was just like, I feel no sympathy. Like, I know that this is trying to sort of like play to, you know, well, this is how she ended up this way.
Yeah.
But it made me care less. Like, seeing Anna in some of these situations, like while she's in the midst of conning people, was more yeah. endearing to me than including yeah. this stuff about her family. And like, I don't know. It's tough because it's true-ish, I guess.
Yeah.
Except
for the bits that aren't.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I don't know. I think they could have done without that.
Yeah, and so Jessica Pressler did actually travel to Germany to try and find out more about Anna's family and upbringing and
yeah.
how she became Anna Delvey.
Yeah.
She stresses she didn't try and break into somebody's yard.
Which is good. Yeah.
But she did eventually just scrap the article and go back to New York.
Yeah.
But yeah, it felt very unnecessary. And I think there's a thing in a lot of our culture where we have to create some tragic backstory. Mm-hmm. Like, some people are just mean. Some people are evil. Some people would set you on fire to get where they want to be.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that we don't like to accept that without some horrible backstory that made them that way.
Yeah. And I think it's so much more compelling when you just lay it out and be like, no, she's just like this.
Yeah. Can we talk about Maud?
I love her.
So Maud is one of the writers in Scriberia, alongside Vivian Kent and, what are their names? Lou and Barry, the two guys. So Scriberia apparently is a very real thing. It's where old writers go to die. But I just thought Maud was so badass. Just like,
so just like all of them. We're so delightful.
I need a spin-off story with Maud, a young Maud, as like foreign affairs correspondent covering these war zones. I just need that in my life now.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah, I just loved like that whole part of it. So I think there's something, and maybe that's just because, like, I'm a writer, but I think there's something really compelling about watching how journalism happens in a way.
Yes.
And I think they did a really good job of that here. And I think also that they did a really good job of using the Scriberia writers as like kind of like a Greek chorus for Vivian Kent.
Yeah.
And like, and you know, she's like, well, I'm gonna do this story. And they're like, yes, and but fact checking and, you know, background yeah. and all this stuff. And like, so I thought that had a really good like interplay between her sort of dogged like tunnel vision on this story.
Yeah.
And them coming in and being like, you've got the essence of this and you can write this story, but here's the things you haven't thought about.
Yeah. Like, you know, when they're like, oh, look at the hotel that didn't press charges against her. You know, the boyfriend's in Dubai. Okay, if he's working for the Sheikh, he's in one of these hotels near the palace because of, you know, Maud just, you know,
happens to know.
Yeah. But yeah, and the scene where Vivian is in the toilet and Maud comes bursting in and she's like, she stole a fucking jet.
Oh, yeah.
She stole a fucking jet. And it's as though she's about to pass out.
Yeah.
She's so excited. And then the two guys come in as well. I just thought it was really great. And it showed a side of journalism that we don't see as much anymore, especially the last few years with the move to like home working and, you know, everything's online. So we don't see a proper newsroom much anymore.
Yeah. Well, so, And like, there aren't that many of them left.
No. So I thought that was great. Like I say, I love Maud. I want to know if she's based on like a real person at New York Magazine or if she's totally fictional, but either way,
she's great.
Then we need a show all about Maud.
Yeah.
That actually leads on nicely to one of my other thoughts about this show was, you know, like you were saying, it could have just been about Anna and her story, but they balanced it between Anna and Vivian. I thought the way they portrayed not just Vivian, but also Todd Spodex, the lawyer, his relationships with people around him, Vivian's like relationship with her husband, with her colleagues, and also the weird friendship kind of between Vivian and Todd, I thought was shown so brilliantly.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it showed, first it showed just how much work can consume your life.
Yeah.
And how easy it is. But also, a journalist and a lawyer, there should be a big barrier there.
Yeah.
And there wasn't, and they became a part of each other's lives.
Yeah.
To the point they were going out for dinner with their respective partners as well. There's a bond there that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you think about what's the last thing that a defense attorney wants to have involved in their case? A fucking journalist.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
You know, an 8-month pregnant journalist at that.
Right? Holy fuck.
And it made their characters really well fleshed out.
Yeah.
Not just characters in the Anna Delvey story. They had their own lives and own stories around that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's something that's really valuable because in a lot of these shows, whether they be like fictionalized, dramatized versions, or documentaries, it focuses so much on like the person at the center of the story, which obviously makes sense. But especially with this kind of thing where you're breaking the story, like someone had to break the story, someone had to find this and be like, oh, this is going to be huge.
Yeah.
So I think that's so much more interesting because it gives you such a different perspective. Like, I just watched the Tinder Swindler documentary.
I've watched that, yeah.
And like, that was another one where they included the journalists who helped break the story. And that added such a layer of like tension and like intrigue that made it 10 times better than if it had just been like, well, this is the guy and this is what he did and this is, you know, somebody wrote about it and then everyone found out. Like, so I really like that approach.
Yeah, that Oh, that's a whole episode all on its own, Tinder Swindler. I have so many thoughts on that. But yeah, I completely agree. Like, if it was just Anna's story, just this is when she arrived in New York and all the way, even if it was told like from the perspective of like through the trial, you know, like kind of like start with the beginning of the trial, tell her story, and then at the end she's found guilty and sentenced.
Yeah, like use the trial as a framing narrative and then go back, hop back and forth in time kind of thing. Yeah.
I don't think that would have been anywhere near as compelling.
Yeah, no, I agree.
As the way it was written.
Yeah,
so not everyone is a fan. So Rachel Deloach Williams, she is not a fan.
No.
So Rachel Deloach Williams sold rights, or HBO optioned her story. She technically broke the story in a way with Vanity Fair, but she didn't know the full extent.
Yeah.
It was just the Morocco trip.
Yeah.
And obviously she's had to sell her rights to the image rights to Netflix. So she at some point has made money from Netflix. Mm-hmm. But she's not happy with the way Netflix
portrayed
Anna, because they think, like we said, they've made her too likable.
Yeah. Which I get.
Yeah. So in the court scene, Spodek is asking her basically how much money she's made from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for this to be the worst thing that ever happened to you, you've done pretty well. It's like, if it all came together, it was $600,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the implication is that it wasn't that bad if she's selling her story.
Mm-hmm.
I completely disagree. If you've been through some kind of trauma, you have the right to make money off it.
Yeah.
We're always saying, like, people should tell their stories, you know, like, the whole Me Too movement, Time's Up, all of that. It was like, oh, people should come forward and tell their stories. Mm. Oh, hang on, wait, you made money from telling your story? Oh, well, no, that's not right.
Yeah.
But if you're going to relive your trauma for the entire world, why shouldn't you get some money for it?
Yeah. And, like, also, she worked at Vanity Fair. This thing happened to her that jeopardized her job in journalism. And Vanity Fair is a great place to tell a story, especially a glitzy, high-class, money-filled story like this.
Yeah.
So, of course, she was gonna sell the story to them, because if nothing else, it saves her bacon, and that's exactly what she needs after being fucking defrauded. I get the sort of criticisms of her, but I don't agree with them, because it's just like, what did you think would happen? Like, yes, some people in this story or some people in similar situations haven't chosen to go down this route, but I could have, and it's fine. It's their story.
And in case nobody's noticed, true crime is having a moment, and that moment is lasting a very long time.
Yeah.
People want to hear all these stories about true crime in all kinds of everything, from white collar, you know, defrauding, right through to serial murder and rape.
Yeah.
But they don't want the victims to have any sort of agency or any sort of voice in it.
Yeah. And that's troubling.
Yes. But that is essentially the upshot of this thing happened to her and she should tell us about it, but she shouldn't have any. Yeah, and she shouldn't have any control over how she's portrayed.
Yeah.
So, like, I, you know, good on her. She got her money back. She's made money. You know, go live your life.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, just scroll on by.
Yeah, exactly.
But so although she didn't like it, most of the other people have really enjoyed the show or liked the way they were portrayed. Mm-hmm. So Casey Duke, the real Casey Duke, the trainer, she reportedly loved the way Laverne Cox portrayed her, which I thought was really cool. She still works as like a life coach mm-hmm. and a trainer.
I have to say, when I first read the original New York Magazine article, I totally pictured Casey as Laverne Cox.
Really? Yeah,
like dead on. And so when her character popped up on the screen, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. That's 100% correct.
You're just manifesting. Yeah.
Dreamcasting, you know, Netflix shows.
Yeah. And Neff Davis, apparently she's like quite happy with the way she was portrayed. She said that the adaptation got pretty much everything right about her, except for the fact she doesn't hate Rachel. Mm-hmm. They're just not friends. Although I suppose that's not quite as dramatic yeah. as, you know, calling her a Karen or a Becky
yeah.
and just having a screaming fight behind her, you know, in the back alley behind a hotel.
Yeah. No, so. It's not as fun.
But interestingly, so Neff is still in touch with Anna, but not regularly. Mm-hmm. But she's in regular contact with Jessica Pressler. They speak like every week.
That is interesting.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
And she says it's like having another mum just in New York. but she does speak to Anna from time to time. So Anna is still in ICE custody.
Mm-hmm.
She's fighting her deportation back to Germany, which she's been held in Orange County in New York. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, so thank you for listening. We're still on our yes. break. We'll be back the first week of April.
Yes, we will.
Or the first full week of April, we should say.
Yeah. We will be rested, refreshed, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. All that good garbage.
Yeah. We'll be back.
Yeah.
So we will see you in April. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys. And let us know what you think of this whole thing. Bye.
Bye.